buckle up. It's showtime.
You're going to risk our lives for a Twinkie?
There's a box of Twinkies in that grocery store. Not just any box of Twinkies. The last box of Twinkies that anyone will enjoy in the whole universe. Believe it or not, Twinkies have an expiration date. Someday very soon, life's little Twinkie gauge is going to go empty.
Who would believe that I would find a clip out of there out of nowhere? Oh, my God. Woody Harrelson in, now I can't remember the darn movie, but it's about some zombie apocalypse. It's a Zombieland. That's the name of the movie. Zombieland. Woody Harrelson and the little kid who played in the, Zuckerberg in the, in the Social Network movie. I always forget that kid's name, too. Curly hair. Mary seems to like that little curly hair dude, but that's one of her favorites. But anyway, it's Reese on the Radio, folks. Welcome back. It is Tuesday, November the 27th, 2012, 1 minute after the hour. We're here, same bad time, same bad channel, as we always are, Monday through Friday. And thank you all for checking in yesterday. If you did not check out the show, please do. I got duped by some fake video yesterday about some poor, beautiful young lady getting hit by a car. Turns out it was completely false. It didn't happen. It was completely put on, and I got suckered in. I thought the video was real. I thought it was some snuff film. I was completely made a fool of. That's okay. Sometimes you get got. We set that up. I know about that, JC. Don't worry about it. He's not calling in as a guest. He's calling in to be a part of the conversation, and we'll introduce him shortly. We had him on last week, before the Thanksgiving holiday. So he's coming to just join this conversation, and we'll talk about some of the things that he's getting into. But I've got a conversation that is ripe for the picking for our guest and compatriot, I want to say contributor to the show today, Dr. Robert Rose, who is going to be on the show today. He's going to be helping us out, in some of the conversations, giving his opinion and what he thinks, as long as our other contributors who are here. That could be Sally D., Edward in Connecticut. Could be White Mike in Florida, Dennis the Mass Menace, all of them seem to call in, whatever. Maybe even Justin from the Justin Stoltz Show will call in today. Mary will be in shortly. She'll join me on the microphone a little bit. But I've got plenty of news and plenty of views to get into, and the biggest story of the day is the Benghazi scandal. But I'm going to save that for 9 o'clock. I'm going to save the Benghazi story for 9 o'clock. I would like to talk about two race-related stories today. Two hugely race-related stories today. Now, one of them is kind of stupid, so I'll leave that till the end. I don't want to start off on a stupid subject about people that I don't care much for. But to give you a heads up on what that is, that's Nicki Minaj.
Just not sure which one.
What the heck? Okay, sorry about that. A little ad popped up on my computer. Scared the hell out of me. Anyway, it's Nicki Minaj, the rapper, and rocker Steven Tyler. We'll get into them shortly. I don't want to get into them now. I'll get into them a little bit. I'll get into them shortly. But this story I found to be very, very interesting. Native Americans, they're not exactly saying of what tribe this group is. They're not saying where these people are from, other than I can say they're from the Montana region, because the story comes out of Montana, and it's a report by the Associated Press. And I know it's going to spark some discussion amongst Negroes against blacks. you know, blacks are going to start having this conversation. This story will get around because it involves money. An Associated Press reports that attorneys representing hundreds of thousands of American Indians say they should start seeing the first payments of a $3.4 billion settlement with the U.S. government by year's end. The settlement between Native Americans across the nation and the government over more than a century worth of squandered and mismanaged land trust royalties became final on Friday. The lawsuit was started by Eloise Cobell of Browning, Montana, in 1996 after the Blackfeet woman saw no accounting of the money held in trust by the government. Cobell died last year of cancer. That's sad. Plaintiff's attorney said on Monday that approximately 350,000 beneficiaries would start receiving $1,000 checks as part of the settlement goes forward. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar says the settlement marks a step towards reconciliation. Now, it's not that I don't care about the American Indians. It's not that I don't care about the Native Americans. If there was an accounting mishap and somebody botched it and it cost these people land, money, whatever it may have been, if it cost these people something and there's a log of this, it can be tracked, there's a paper trail, I don't care if they etched it in stone, hieroglyphics, or in sand, scrolls, whatever. Bottom line is, if there's a record of this, and they fought this in a federal court, and they won, that's absolutely fine with me. I don't have an argument with that. $3.4 billion, that's okay, folks. It's going to come out of our pockets anyway. I mean, if you think about all the money that was squandered on Solyndra and Fixter, or whatever that stupid car company is, Justin Bieber's got a car from them, whatever. Think about all the money squandered on those greenhouse projects, those green jobs. This is nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. But this is going to spark outrage amongst the Negro culture. The blacks have already started mumbling about it. It's quiet. They're all starting to rumble about this quietly to themselves. Yo, man, you heard? Yeah, man, the Indians going to get $3.4 billion. Brothers ain't never seen us about no reparations. First the Jews, now the Indians. Ain't nobody come to see us about no money. Mm-hmm. When we going to see some reparations, yo? Know what I'm saying? I know my grandpa was a slave. I know my great-great somebody was a slave up in this piece. I wouldn't be here. All my people got wide noses. I know for sure I got some Indian blood in me, too. Maybe I should get a check. I'm sure that's what they're saying, folks. That's not hyperbole. I'm sure that's what they're saying. You think I'm mocking them? You think I'm mocking them? That's what they're saying. There's no denying this. It's what they're going to be saying. The question is, do Negroes deserve it? And will Negroes get it? Now, I've got a theory, folks, and we'll bring in Dr. Robert Rose and see whether or not he agrees or disagrees with me. But I'm telling you, I'm not going to say his opinion doesn't matter. I don't want to put it that way. And I don't want to start off on the wrong foot with him. It's not that his opinion doesn't matter. His opinion matters. But the bottom line is, my opinion is going to be right. Whether you agree or not, my opinion is going to be right. Here's why. First of all, blacks are never going to see a dime from the federal government in the form of reparations. Never going to see a dime. Because, see, here's what the Indians did that will not happen for the African Americans. This woman is making sure $1,000 goes into the hands of 350,000 people. $3.4 billion. She she's going to make sure that $1,000 goes to 350,000 people, the ones that she's representing. And then more money will come. It's going to go directly into the hands of these people. Here's why blacks won't see a dime. One red cent. And it's very simple. Al Sharpton, Charlie Rangel, Jesse Jackson Jr., John Claiborne. Name any person in the Congressional Black Caucus. They'll never, ever once allow reparations to be paid to African Americans in this country. Even if there's a paper trail. Even if they do all the diligence that they're supposed to do in order to find out whether or not their folks own land, were beaten, were robbed, were disenfranchised. Anybody who's in the Congressional Black Caucus or a so-called black leader is never, ever going to see that lawsuit go by. Here's why. Because $3.4 billion ain't enough for them. And if you pay out one lump sum of $3.4 billion or whatever the number is, if it's $55 billion, if it's one lump sum, it'll never be enough because of one reason. You can't keep hitting the piggy bank once you get a lump sum. The Congressional Black Caucus, Jesse Jackson Jr., Al Sharpton, Charlie Rangel, these guys like to continue to hit the piggy bank. There's no lump sum deal here. They want the 20-year, 30-year, 40-year payoff. They want to be able to go at time and time again, look at them poor niggas. Cut me a check. Next year, look at them poor niggas. Cut me a check. You know we got more poor niggas? Cut me a check. They want to keep going to the till that is known as the federal government. If the federal government pretty much says, all right, you're here, you're done, take your money and run. They're not going to see a cut. They're not going to see a cut that they normally would see under these circumstances. Charlie Rangel put up a $2.6 million building in Harlem. It's empty. It was a bunch of cronyism like crazy. Money went everywhere. And you know what Charlie Rangel will do next year? Look at these poor niggas. Cut me a check. So black people all day can sit around and talk about how they want reparations, how they want their check, but your quote-unquote Negro leaders, your black leaders, the people who you elect into office, you think they'll let one lump sum come out and that'll be the end of it, where the money will be spent and squandered and lost? When they know that the better deal is to sit there, get reelected, and squander more and more money every time they ask for it? Look at them poor niggas, cut me a check. They'll keep getting it from the taxpayer, keep getting it from the taxpayer, keep getting it from the taxpayer. They don't see that money ever running out. And when a president like Barack Obama, who believes in what? Redistribution of wealth. They know they've got an endless stream of other people's cash. They're never going to do it that way, folks. You're never going to see one red cent. Your representatives will take that money from the government and disperse it to you at their disposal. They'll give it to the people that they love and they care about, and you'll see nothing. You might see a building here. You might see a program there. But you get a check? No, you get something different. You'll get welfare. You'll get food stamps. You'll get the WIC program. You'll get a job training center. You'll get public housing. You're never going to see a check. So forget about it. And they'll never let you see a check. And those are your leaders, ladies and gentlemen. They don't think that you know what's best to do with the money. Come on, seriously. We all know how bad slavery was. Everybody recognizes it's the original sin in this country. Everybody recognizes what African Americans had to deal with in this country and continue to deal with systemically in this country. Indians went in 1996. They were here before the white man got here. In 1996 until 2012, they finally got it settled. Look how long it took them. Don't you think, seriously, somebody should just walk in and just say, hey, slavery, cut me a check. Don't you think it'd be easy? But why has there never been a lawsuit filed? Why has it never been considered? Who's shooting it down? You had 2 years of a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and a Democrat president who believes in a redistribution of wealth, taxing the rich to give to the poor, and no lawsuit was filed. No lawsuit filed, no reparations given. The first African-American president, nobody even thought about it. Which only literally solidifies what I'm telling you. I mean, it's cut and dry, folks. It's cut and dry. The number is 347-308-8701. Let's bring in our guest to the show today, Dr. Robert Rose. With the exception of how harsh I put it, Dr. Rose, is there any doubt?
Is there any doubt?
Yeah, is there any doubt that I've got this thing nailed?
You mean that black people will never receive any money from the government in a lump sum like the Native Americans are getting?
Right. For
a
the
small
reasons
group
I
of Native Americans are getting.
Yeah, I mean, for the reasons I just displayed.
Well, for one reason is, as you point out, there's no benefit for leadership to do something like that. Leadership is in leadership to retain its own power, and the way that you retain your power is by seemingly give people things. But one of the things that I've learned as a teacher is that when you give people things, you disempower them, and that's what has been happening. It happened when the whites were in charge, and it's happened when black people became more powerful and were in charge. The people in power don't disembowel and disempower the people that are powerless. They don't give power away. What they seem to do is give gifts, but the gifts come with a string. I had a father-in-law that was very generous, and when I came out of the service, was very powerful. I had been a psychiatric social worker. I had my own office. I was only 21 years old, and I was doing all kinds of therapy and everything, and I knew that he was a manipulator. But I thought I had enough power, self-confidence, that he couldn't control me. But when we came back to California, I gave in on a few things because I wanted to satisfy my wife and her mother-in-law, and my mother-in-law, and trying to do a nice thing for people. And one day I woke up and realized this guy had me by the short hairs. He had me in power. And that was one of the reasons I got divorced, because I realized this guy controlled my life. And how did he control my life? He gave me things. He gave us an apartment. He helped us with our kids, But there's always the strings attached. And I think this is the thing that I tried to teach. And I thought you did a good job last week, too, in making people understand that nobody gives you a free lunch. That's the scam, and when somebody gives you a free lunch, they disempower you, and I think that's what you're saying. And
yeah,
if you want
absolutely right on the disempowerment part. That is also true, because it's also, and I think you're right here, it's also to give the powerless the illusion that these folks, the Jesse Jacksons, the Al Sharptons, that they are needed. By being your leader, we've got your best interest at heart.
They tell you they love you.
Right.
I'm giving you this. That shows how I love you. That's how my father-in-law worked. Well, Bob, I love you, and I want you to have the best of everything. And I kept telling him, Let me do the things myself. Let my wife and I live in a small apartment, you know, on UCLA campus. $29. No, he said, I'm going to give you money, you know, because it's embarrassing to me, you know, as a businessman to have my daughter and my son-in-law, you know, living on the campus when I can afford to give them all kinds of stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, so my wife, you know, she got sucked into it. And to keep peace, I went gave in. I lost my individuality. And that's what happens to black people. They lose their power. They lose their individuality because they think they're entitled to stuff. It's all a scam.
But they're playing into the entitlement role. They're playing into that saying, but this is because there's a constant reminder that I believe that doesn't just happen in the black community. I believe it happens with all minorities or many minorities. I'm going to probably exclude Asians in this, but most minorities are corrupted by the idea of victim speech.
Yep.
You know, by telling them, you know, you don't have, they don't want you to have the it's rigged against you. You've got no shot. We're going to even the playing field by giving you things. So I think that they preach that victimhood, and then it sort of it sort of then breeds into this entitlement world.
Yeah. Well, I know that one of my guests, when she was 8 years old, she was a black gal in Detroit, and she was sent to, you know, an all-white gifted class. And the first thing the teacher of the gifted says, well, you know, we have this little black girl here, you know, we'll just have to more or less live with her. You know, don't expect very much from her because, you know, she's black and she's not going to be able to learn like you guys. Well, it so pissed her off that she became the most outstanding kid in that school, and she went on to be an outstanding educator. But she took the thing the way that it should have been taken and said, screw you, I'm gonna be somebody. Whereas, you know, okay, you're my boss, and I'm going to take this, you know, and thank you for making me feel, you know, I've got something here, and I really appreciate what you're giving me. That's crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, again, that's why I believe that the rumbling is going to happen soon. But you know what? I think if the rumbling does begin, I don't believe that anyone's going to say – I don't think there's going to be much conversation. I believe that what's going to happen immediately after that conversation begins is that it's going to be, excuse me, it's going to be shut down by those leaders. Because the whole idea is we're not going to let you get that money into your own hands. You know, let us be the arbiter of how that money should be used. You know, that's pretty much what it's going to be. I'm interested to hear what White Mike has to say about this. Dr. Rose, hold on for me one second. Let me get White Mike in here. White Mike!
Hey, guys. Hey, what's man, that? I'm going to surprise you, and I think that we really should give reparations to black Americans because it would be fun to watch.
Like the Dave Chappelle episode, right?
It would exactly be like the Dave Chappelle show. You give every black person in America $100,000, and in 2 weeks, they'll all be broke.
But,
they'll all
okay,
have
so,
grills. They'll have grills and spinning rims, and they'll be friggin' broke.
Yeah, but even if that's the case, remember there are several reasons why you can't do this. As far as from a perspective of somebody like a Jesse Jackson or an Al Sharpton, I give Al Sharpton a little more credit here than I would to Jesse Jackson. Because Jesse Jackson would say, hey, you know what? If everybody gets $100,000 and we, you know, and then we teach them how to manage their money, you know, they can, you know, they could be great entrepreneurs and, you know, maybe they could start their own business, whatever, all that other stuff. But I know what somebody like, I know what some people would be thinking if they were to get, they were to get that money. And the bottom line would be, and why this would probably upset most of these black leaders, is now they've got nothing to argue about. Because I want you to look at this from this perspective. Look at how much resentment there are for Jews in this country when it comes to blacks in this country. Blacks are probably some of the most anti-Semitic people in the world because of things like reparations. Forget about the whole idea about them, you know, them being the chosen people. That bothers them enough. But the fact that they never forget the Holocaust, they hold that near and dear to them. You know, they wear it like a badge of honor. They never let you forget. And with that, they fought for what was considered, you know, their reparations and got them. You know, got their money back, sued people, went after people for war crimes. Blacks were resentful of that because Jews were able to make moves that they couldn't do politically. You know, I hear black people get angry at Jews when certain things like city projects get stopped or happen because Jews have political power in places like New York. I tell this story I tell this story over and over again about how right before the New York election, the mayoral election, they had built a bike road down in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, in this Jewish neighborhood. And bike riders were coming down the road, and the Jewish community said that they saw too many women who were wearing, like, sports bras or wearing tight short shorts and looking very skimpy. So the Jews in the community said they didn't want that bike lane there, encouraging people to come by their neighborhood with women showing off their goods. So they called the mayor's office, they called the city, and asked them to remove it. A week later, the city removed the bike lane. It was removed. Now I ask the question over and over again. Do you think blacks can get something like that done if they ask for more? Hell no. They've got no political power. They've got no clout.
Well, I think one of the things difference about the thing with, the Germans had lost the war, and the victors always have, the right to do the reparations and all those kind of things. But in this case, the Jews were, in a sense, the victors after the Americans and the English, the Allies freed freedom and everything. So and there was basis for that.
But the basis for most of that was not the same thing
for the blacks, because you're not going to get money from the American government because the present American government, well, some people do, they don't feel they did anything wrong.
As far as reparations was concerned?
Yeah.
I mean, you mean as far as Jews getting their money back?
Well, they did feel that in Germany, but they don't feel it here for the blacks.
No, forget about Germany. No. First of all, everybody felt in the United States and probably abroad, with the exception of Arab countries, that what happened – remember, there was a lexicon after World War II, after 1945. The lexicon, I want to use the zeitgeist, if you will, was that there was a large amount of guilt that was placed on countries like the United States that reacted very late into World War II. You know, even, I mean, come on, John Paul II was late to apologize for Catholics and their non-response. He didn't do that until the late 90s.
Okay. So
the bottom line was that the reason why Jews were able to go after people like that, you think about how Hollywood responded to things that happened in the Holocaust. Anybody remember the movie Brazil? You know, the idea was, you know, there was this thing about going after quote-unquote war criminals from World War II in the mid to late 80s until the early 90s. That became very, very prominent. So that was part of our whole lexicon, part of our zeitgeist, if you will. So it was commonplace. So Jews, when they started looking for their reparations and looking for their money to get back, there was this overall theme of saying, hey, what happened to them was pretty effed up. They should get paid for it. Blacks have been sitting around forever going, hey, how come no one's ever thought about that with us? And most response was, hey, nigga, you got roots. You know, you eight part miniseries, damn it. So it's bad. It's bad, but it's true. That's all I'm saying.
Well, so black people need to own more movie studios then.
Oh, yeah, listen, you're right. John Singleton should not be talking about Boys in the Hood and then doing Rosewood. You know? and doing films like Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
Classic piece of cinema.
Oh, we can't even get our movies distributed. What are you mean, on our own
studio? you got Tyler Perry.
You're talking about entitlements, and I think this is what we're really talking about. So how do you get people over the idea that they deserve entitlement and earn things and have a work ethic and believe that they are capable of functioning on an equal basis with everybody else in the country? And
you know
Most of the time, what I still see now is that the black kids they don't believe that they can do as well as the other kids, and the teachers don't believe it. And so there is this misconception that has been bought by the black population and the rest of the population that black people just are not as smart as anybody else.
I'm going to open a can of worms here, Doc, but I grew up in the deep rural South. I'm not a stranger to black people.
Okay.
And trust me when I tell you, there is a substantial amount of the black population in that part of the country that are really friggin' stupid.
Well, I'm telling you, you can train people to believe that, and then they act stupidly.
No, you don't have to train people who are stupid if they're legitimately stupid.
Well, I don't think there's that many people that are that legitimately
stupid. So there's no derivation among the species as far as IQ levels? Everybody's equal, everybody's the same with the same potential?
No, I didn't say
that at
all.
Okay, now let me ask you another question, Doc. Have you watched the Olympics? Do you watch the Olympics and NBA and NFL?
Yeah, I watch it.
Is there a racial disparity as far as which race produces the best athletes?
And there used to be the same thing in boxing. In boxing, it used to be the lowest minority always.
No. Boxing is different. Boxing is an economic thing. Because right now the best boxers in the world are Russians. And Russian poor is poorer than black American poor. Boxing is a sport that's driven by economic disparity because you have to be poor to get punched in the face for a living. But what I'm saying, there's a genetic athletic disparity in certain events. So if we can have a race that is physically superior in some ways, can't you have races that are also intellectually superior? Or does genetic derivation not work that way? It's only working the right way.
No, hold on now, Mike. That's an interesting question.
You're wrong, because there's a thing called epigenetics. And epigenetics says that there's only about maybe 25% of people's abilities that are hardwired. Everything else, you can train people.
You can train an Asian person to sprint as fast as a West African. No, you can't.
We're talking about intelligence.
How is intelligence different than any other physical attribute?
Because intelligence is much more complicated than the physical. It's true that
why do Asians test across the board higher on all standardized tests?
I'm a white guy.
Else?
And I was one of the fastest people in the world, and I beat a lot of black guys. So
you're as fast as Usain Bolt. Is any white guy as fast as Usain Bolt? No,
well,
there's
not. I'm not as fast as him. No, I'm 80 years old.
No, there's no white. There's only one white guy in the top 10 of fastest sprinters in the world, sir.
I'm trying to understand, guys.
When you structure, things, and that's the only way that people can get into activities. The only way that my black kids felt that they could get ahead was either being in music or in sports. And when you have a lot of people that believe that, and they're willing to go through the pain that it takes to be a great athlete,
perhaps they're genetically better at the sport. You're telling me that white kids try to sprint? Of course they do.
Guys, for one second, I want to get in here. I need to get in here, Mike. There's something very interesting about what you just said. you're saying that, okay, you're equating intellectual ability.
What did you say?
Are you equating intellectual ability to physical ability? Like, are you saying
why
that?
Why not?
I'm not saying that you shouldn't. I'm asking you this because I'm trying to understand your thesis here. You're saying that the intellectual ability can be compared to that of someone's physical ability because you're saying that based upon not economics, but just based upon it could be surroundings, what you learn day to day, what's commonplace to you. Can attribute hear me out. I think I have this right. What's commonplace to a person, okay? It's like what's called common speech to me, like from where I grew up, right? If everybody around me that I grew up in all played handball, right? I lived around a lot of Spanish kids. They all played handball, okay? My background, I don't have brothers. And I have one sister, but I have four siblings, but I have one sister who played handball as well. But we were surrounded by Spanish people who played handball as a sport. I became very proficient in that because of my surroundings and what was considered my intellectual following.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It was because this is what was my social norm. And what I learn intellectually has everything to do with what I do socially. So I'm asking you, like, you're equating with that. I've never heard that before, but I think I'm agreeing with you because I'm saying this is part of the reason why I'm 6'5" and I can't play basketball because I didn't have a lot of basketball players in my neighborhood. They didn't have a lot of hoops in my neighborhood.
I'm tall and black.
You're kind of missing
my point.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, I equate everything to genetics. I mean, people are not equal. Yeah, there have always been kids in school who picked things up faster than others. There are people who didn't have to study. There are people who got by with minimal effort and beat people who had superior effort. Those people have a genetic gift, and a genetic gift can be intellectual or it can be physical.
Okay.
Well, I had a genetic gift for running. And when I was 18, I tied the world record, according to my coach, in the sprint. But I pissed it off. I didn't work hard enough, and I was more interested in the ladies than I was in training. And so I lost it.
I've known people who were bodybuilders who were able to cheat on their diet and not work out half as hard and get better results than people who are not genetically gifted.
Hmm.
So what's the – okay, so – but – so that's what I'm trying to tell you. We're talking about epigenetics means that you have certain gifts. You can either develop them early, you can develop
them
late.
But people epigenetics,
are not.
If I'm following what you're saying, there are some people who are born superiorly gifted than other people.
Yeah,
and
people
at an individual level, it can also be on a racial or ethnic group level. And that's evidenced by poor Kenyans who dominate the marathon with poor training.
Now, I'm telling you, if you study genetics, if you study Dr. Roger Williams, he talks about biological individuality, and you are unique. He explains that each one of us is individually unique. And in every culture and every race, there is a wide range of ability in each group. In anything, there's a wide range. Teachers know that in every class there's a wide range of ability. But what I'm telling you as a teacher, otherwise I wouldn't want to be a teacher or a psychologist. You can train people. You can go beyond what their genetic givens are, and you can get them to higher and higher levels.
I disagree. I think you can bring them to their genetic potential, but you cannot exceed someone's genetic potential through training. That doesn't work from an athletic standpoint. And it shouldn't work from an intellectual standpoint. People have speed.
I mean, what do you think? You see people in college that, you know, if you gave them RQs, you know, there's people that are working and levels are in normal range who surpass people that have higher IQs because they work harder. And
yeah, but I would make
not,
the same.
But they're not.
I would make the same argument here, Dr. Rose, that you could get a college basketball player who's like, you know, who's like the greatest college player ever, you know, makes all his three-pointers. He's a great from the foul line. Got triple-digit, you know, a triple-double stats. The guy gets into the NBA, and he can barely lay up. He can't play the zone. He can't play man-to-man. He can't even – I mean, he pretty much can't even dunk. He can't play a 15-minute period. You know, you get those players all the time who are like celebrities in college, but that's the limit of their genetics.
Why are the best female marathoners in the world inferior to the top 10 male marathoners? I mean, they get the best training in the world, and they have the genetic potential – but their genetic potential is limited by their gender. They can't surpass the gifts that men are born with.
Okay, I would agree that physically there are easier and more obvious limits to the potential. You know, people can only run so fast, they can jump so high. But we have not even begun to reach the mental possibilities of the human race. We're just beginning to get that. So when you tell me that there's a whole race of people that are stupid, I would disagree.
No, I'm telling you. I didn't say. I'm telling you that there are races. Races rank differently in their intellectual capabilities.
I'm telling you, it's because
of
the way they're educated and the way that
poor Vietnamese kids come here from fishing villages and in a generation lead their classes.
What?
Poor Vietnamese kids come here from nothing. And in a generation, they graduate valedictorian. Kids come from the slums of India, and IIT, the Indian Institute of Technology, is the toughest school in the world. It's harder than MIT, these are kids from the slums of Mumbai.
Last week, Reese pointed out the fact that the culture of the black students is don't be smart because you are acting white. Don't you think that has a tremendous impact on the majority of black kids that are in that particular group?
If you will look at the results from the company that runs the SAT test, you will find that black children from households who make more than $100,000 a year score lower than white children from households with incomes of $10,000 a year. And you can't tell me that a student from a $100,000 household doesn't have more emphasis placed on learning and have more opportunities than a poor white kid from the trailer park.
Okay,
now, Mike,
I'll tell you something. If you look at Dr. Popham's research on the SAT and those other kinds of tests, he will tell, especially all the standardized tests, he will say these tests are all skewed toward the white population.
Then how come
Mike. So you are saying, you know me. I'm a free spirit when it comes to you, man. I let you say whatever. I don't get angry about it or testy or any of that stuff. But I do. I have to ask this. So you're saying that this study was done that a young black kid that was in a household with parents made over $100,000 a year, which would be considered middle class, still scored lower than a kid who lived in a household.
It's not a study. It's not a study. It's information gleaned by the American College Testing Board. It's not a study. It's the fact. When
that's
you take the SAT, you have to give out your demographic information. They know who your family is.
Okay. So the black kid, no matter what, considering the circumstances, he scored lower than a kid who was living below the poverty line.
Yes, that's from the American College Testing Board. That's a fact. It's not a study. It's not skewable by political opinion or feel-good college professor liberal demographics. It's a fact.
Now, the question is, what is the fact suggesting about black students in this testing?
It's a big business.
The fact is the fact. You can skew the fact however you want, but a fact is a fact.
The fact, if it's skewed by people who have something to gain by it.
There's no way to skew the demographic, Doc. That's what you're not getting. It's not skewable.
No, I want to hear what, in essence, they're saying about the black student.
Forget what they're saying. They're saying this is the fact. The fact, according to our numbers, is people who make this amount of money from this race score lower than people from this race who make a tenth as much money. That's it. It's a fact. It's not politically correct, but it's a fact.
So it doesn't, in essence, it doesn't matter what the social economic background of the African American is. The bottom line is that, oh God, and I cannot believe you actually, I'm saying this out loud. In essence, you're saying that the black kid is not as smart as the white kid.
He's not performing as well for some reason. And if the tests are skewed towards white people, as the liberal mantra says, it doesn't explain why poor Indian and poor Asian kids outscore white people.
I mean, do you have any theories? Because I don't have any theory on that.
Listen, I got a theory on that. That's epigenetics. They have the motivation. That's what I'm trying to tell you. People that have the motivation can go beyond what their genetic givens are.
So, Doc, what you're saying then is that black people aren't stupid, they're just lazy.
No, they are taught
to be.
That's
what you're saying. If it's not an intelligent thing, it's a motivation thing. Their lack of motivation, why they don't perform, therefore they're lazy.
You're saying they're lazy. That's
you just said they were lazy. You said ethogenetics, effort can overcome genetic limitations. And they're not putting the effort to overcome their limitations, so therefore they're lazy.
No, that's what you're putting in my mouth. Not saying they're lazy.
I think this brings up an interesting question here. So even if, and to bring it back to the original subject, even if indeed African Americans were to receive reparations, based upon what you're saying, Mike, is that it wouldn't matter anyway, is because they don't have what would be considered the strengths that would keep them financially stable anyway. It's just because it's not in them.
Where is the black entrepreneurship? There's none, except for, you know, rappers who have endorsement deals and guys selling rock. There's no black entrepreneurship.
Outside of that, you got Sean John selling clothing and what's the name, selling liquor, you know. But no, I get your point. Let me take a call because I want to hear this call's coming from Jersey from Left Films. The number's 347-308-8701. Left, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, man?
How are you?
I'm good. I find that last statement kind of funny about black people being entrepreneurs through rap and clothing line. That's a false statement. There's a lot of African American black people that are entrepreneurs besides quote unquote rappers and clothing in the clothing industry. But
they're pimps too. I forgot.
Excuse me?
They're also pimps.
What?
They run underground dog fighting rings and stuff like that. But I don't see any black owned convenience stores. They all seem
would you
to
say
be
entrepreneurs?
Well,
when you talk about entrepreneurs, you're talking about
you talking about convenience stores. Well, there are a few small convenience stores out there. Nothing corporate wise. I personally myself own a beauty supply / barbershop. So
you're pretty much going to lose that to the Koreans.
You consider yourself stupid?
To sell the Indian hair.
You consider yourself stupid?
I can't. First of all, I can't lose that to the Koreans because I'm in a location where it's profitable for my kind to succeed and to maintain and possibly excel.
You need to go watch good hair, man.
I'm actually getting ready to put Sally's out of business, and she's Caucasian. So
you need to watch good hair, man. The distributorships are all Korean.
Excuse me?
He's saying that the distributorships
for black hair care products
Korean.
Are all Korean. Go watch good hair, man. Chris Rock.
If you're going on that terms, the Koreans do actually have sole control of the hair and beauty product. Yes, they do.
Well, there you go.
But,
and it's not long before they expand to the local market.
But the thing, what I'm saying is, you was talking about entrepreneurship, and then you jumped to something else, dog. What are you talking about?
Hold on.
Let's stay on the same level here.
No, I told you that your industry that you claim to be an entrepreneur in is dominated on distributor level by Koreans. So you have a tiny piece of the pie, but you don't own anything.
I own my own business.
Your people don't own the supply line for your own hair care products.
I am an entrepreneur.
And you used to.
Well, so wait a minute. Here's another question. Let Films. Let me ask you. Hold on, guys.
One thing the Koreans can take from me is my license.
Really?
Really?
They have that kind of power?
They can choose not to sell to you.
I own my own license. So they can't take that. So if I decide to give up the beauty supply part, guess what? I can still cut African-American, Caucasian, Spanish, and Mexicans, who actually I have 68% of the Mexican population in my community.
And you think they couldn't do that if they chose to?
You're out of New Jersey,
the Vietnamese took over the nail business. Sisters all go to Vietnamese nail salons.
Hold on, Mike. Is this guy stupid? Wait. Everybody, left. You're in the Jersey area, right?
Right.
Okay, so you're in the Jersey area. Now, I mean, I don't know if you're in like Newark or Trenton, sort of like neighborhoods.
No,
but you
I'm actually in the Wildwood area where it's like Texas.
Are you kidding me? You're in Wildwood?
Yeah.
I used to live on Oak.
Huh?
I used to live on Ocean Avenue.
Did you?
Yeah.
I have a business right on Pacific Avenue.
Are you kidding me? That's wild.
No kidding.
Now that's interesting. Hold on, guys, because see, I know something about the area that left is in. Wildwood is not a black neighborhood.
No.
So
it's predominantly Caucasian.
Yeah, it's predominantly. You crazy? I got into plenty of fights with those white boys at the bar. So that's an interesting thing that you're in that area as a black hair care product owner, doing well, and the Koreans have not taken you over yet. That's interesting.
Absolutely not.
I'm actually
absolutely
a little
not.
Young.
But who's the?
That's what I'm telling you.
Who's your wholesaler?
I have quite a few wholesalers. Quite a few. And they're Korean.
90% of them are Korean, aren't
they? Yeah, they are. But do you believe that?
Can you imagine what they think when they see my face walking to their business?
I can imagine in Wildwood. I can imagine in Wildwood. Guys, I don't know if you know Wildwood, but think Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, Boy Pierce.
It's sort of like that. Everybody, hold on for a second, because I want to continue with this reparations conversation. Some more people have jumped in. Dennis the Menace is here, and so is Edwin in Connecticut. So, guys, Lev, can you stick around for a little bit?
Absolutely.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you calling in. So, White Mike, Dr. Rose, please hang on for a little bit. Hopefully we'll get Sal in here, because I'd like him to join in on this conversation if he's not around yet. So, give me a couple of seconds. I promise you I will be back. Shortly, as we return right here on Resend Radio, I haven't taken a break for the whole hour. Got to take one. We'll take one in a minute, and we'll be back for the top of the hour right here on Resend Radio.
Save Us Chuck Minute is brought to you by Common Sense Everywhere, except in Washington. My fellow Americans, the vote is over, and we see that America has chosen bigger government by the slightest margins. Our founding fathers foresaw an event such as this. Thomas Jefferson said, "I predict future happiness for Americans if they can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under the pretense of caring for them." Clearly, many of us are not happy. Jefferson also said a government big enough to give you everything you want is strong enough to take everything you have. The election was not a landslide by any stretch of the imagination. It was more of a slippery slope that's rolling towards statism. I hope and pray that our people will see that freedom is always better than free stuff. Chuck Woolery, trying to save America. You know, it's getting harder every day. Like us on Facebook at the Save Us Chuck Woolery page and follow us on Twitter at Save Us Chuck.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Have you lost your mind? I mean, how is it that you can disrespect a man's ethnicity when you know we've influenced nearly every facet of white America, from our music to our style of dress, not to mention your basic imitation of our sense of cool, walk, talk, dress, mannerisms? We enrich your very existence, all the while contributing to the gross national product through our achievements in corporate America. It's these conceits that comfort me when I'm faced with the ignorant, cowardly, bitter, and bigoted who have no talent, no guts. People like you who desecrate things they don't understand when the truth is you should say, "Thank you, man," and go on about your way. But apparently you're incapable of doing that. So, and don't tell me to be cool. I am cool.
Absolutely nailed it. Reese on the Radio, top of the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is November the 27th, 2012. Don't worry, folks, we've got plenty of other news to get into, but I want to continue this conversation about reparations. If, in fact, you're just joining us now, so an Indian tribe in the mid-90s filed a lawsuit. It was filed by one woman who has recently died, filed a lawsuit against the U.S. government about, I guess, checks and balances with her tribe, okay? They were checks, balances, money, finances, accounts, all of that stuff was mismanaged by the American government. When they found out about it, they sued him back in 96. Finally, they've settled the agreement, and $3.4 billion is going to this tribe and some 350,000 members of the tribe.
Why 16 years later are they finally – I mean, isn't there a statute of limitations?
No, because it was filed in 1996, and they probably just ended it. But Ken Salazar –
it took them 16 years?
For them to finally settle.
How much of the taxpayers' money did they use?
Try to sue the state, Mayor. Mary, try to sue the state.
How much of the taxpayers' money did they use?
I don't know. I have no idea.
To drag this shit on for 16 years. I want my reparations, goddammit.
Well, here's my point. Anyway, so by the end of the year, which is less than, about a month now, that some 350,000 members of this troop, this tribe, I guess, 350,000 of them are going to be handed $1,000, and that's just the beginning. Now, it's not certain how many people they are. I went and checked the facts. There are some 4.1 million Native Americans, that's including Alaskans, in this country. But this is 350,000 going to do it. It brought up the question to me, there's going to be some rumbling in the African-American community about their reparations. Should they get them? And I made the argument about why they won't. And the argument clearly is because I said that there's no way that the likes of Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Charlie Rangels, and you can pretty much count in the entire Congressional Black Caucus, is not going to let the federal government settle its claims with the American people or American blacks, give them quote-unquote checks, and then walk away when you have these groups who can currently just keep saying, these niggas is poor, cut me a check. And they can do that as many times as they want to the federal government. Keep people impoverished, keep going back to the federal government and keep saying, see, we got poor people. See, we got them living in rundown houses.
Well,
see, we got them living. See, we got them living like this. See, they're living like that. Cut me a check. If this is, in essence, what the government is going to do with this Indian group is going to say, here's your check. We're done. We don't want to hear from you folks again. You got your money. Can you imagine if that happened to the African-American community? Here's your money. You got your reparations. Don't come see us anymore. Now you do with your money what you will.
For
then
the
they
love of Jesus, give the African-Americans their reparations, please.
So they can stop asking. See, that's what I'm saying. But these there are guys.
And we're even.
Right,
we're
right, right. But remember, the Congressional Black Caucus will not do that. Not when they can keep getting that money funneled in from the federal government and disperse it any way they want to. They're not going to do that. They're not going to cut off that check. They get the check and then they disperse it to their people. They want the power of that money. That's why I brought it up. It's like African Americans do not understand that this isn't about whether or not the federal government will give them their money. I said in the beginning on the opening monologue, you have a black first black president, you had a Democratic House, and you had a Democratic Senate. No one brought up reparations. And here's a president who believes in a redistribution of wealth. And it was never brought up. Why? Because there's not one person who's in the Democrat Party who would have ever said, you mean give the money to them and don't let us disperse it? Hell no! And that's why I brought Left Films onto the show, and Dr. Rose had to go. But I'm going to get Left. Based upon what I just said, do you agree with me that there's no way people like the Congressional Black Caucus are ever, or guys like Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton and the like, are ever going to let African Americans just get a check and then it's over?
Nah, that's not gonna happen. That's not gonna happen. And I'm kind of like wondering, and I'm African American, black, whatever you want to call me. I mean, we got so many titles. We got so many titles. I don't even know which one, you know, that we consider as being real or define who we are. You know,
well, certain titles apply for certain situations, Left. That's how I look at it.
Yeah. First we was Nigers, then we was niggers, then we was Negroes, then we was black, then we was African American. I mean, they
don't
keep changing.
Don't forget about
colored. Colored was in the mix. I mean, we got so many titles that I get lost, you know. But what I was about to say is that reparation. Why are we asking for something that we clearly, I mean, don't need. We don't need it. Why do
well,
we
Mike
need
says,
reparations?
Mike,
I think a lot of African-American, colored, Negro, black people out there would disagree with you
yeah,
on that one.
Left, I think that they disagree with you. I don't believe that they see
disagree?
The obstacle in front
because
of them.
Because they want to get it easy. They want it easy. They don't want to work for it. You know, and I can say that openly. You know, as an African American, black, you know, Negro, whatever you want to call me, because and I did two prison visits. I was a drug dealer at once.
Really?
And I'm going to say this. Yeah, absolutely. And I say this. We want it easy, and I include myself. And I say this as a whole. We want it easy. We don't want to work. We don't want to be motivated and instill the conscious education in our kids. To be motivated and self-driven and be determined to go out and get on our own. We don't educate our kids to do that. Because majority of us don't do that. We're not like that. So why should a people give us something that we clearly going to just go spend up on and buy sneakers, clothes, and drugs? We don't invest it. We don't get our own business. We got four more years with a black president, and not man one of us is talking about let's get our community together. Let's come together. We are so divided, it doesn't make any sense. We are stigmatized with this Willie Lynch mentality that is crazy. I mean, and it's not getting any better. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. And
I see it every day. I have, and I'm gonna tell, and I said this earlier, I have a beauty supply and a barbershop, okay? There's two other black barbershops in the community of Wildwood, which is fine. Because if you go in the cities, you see a barbershop on every corner, and most of them is Mexican or Spanish, and you got a few that's black. But
right.
There's a large number of black folks living in Cape May County as a whole. They call us the majority because the majority of white folks, but a lot of the white folks do live up in Pennsylvania. They just have houses down here where they come down during the summertime and get the hell out of here. You know what I mean? Because there's nothing down here in the wintertime. It's very slow. But there's a lot of black folks around here. Now, I'm going to tell you, I have 5%, 5 to 10% African-American people that come to my shop to get haircuts. I got 68% Mexicans, and I got 25% Hispanic, Latinos, Puerto Ricans, whatever you want to call them. And in the summertime, I have 100% of foreigners, Russians, Guatemalan, Africans, all of them come to my shop.
And these are all during the tourist season where you got all the people influxing from other countries.
Right. Right now, at this point, at this case in point, and this time, I got 5% black people. And everybody out here knows who I am, knows what I've been through, and knows how I got to the point of where I'm at. Like I said, I did two prison bids for selling drugs. Two. Not one, two. I just turned 40 on 9/11, 40 years old. I came home 9 years ago. I wrote two books. I did a short film called Born With It, talking about HIV, how a young African-American female contracted the HIV virus and how she spread it throughout her community. I wrote a book called Time in the Inside, where it clearly takes you step-by-step how a young kid go from the streets through the court system, how you get screwed to the prison system, how time become worse. I go to schools, drug programs, halfway houses, any place you could possibly name to take my program, which is called LEF Presentational Q&A on Real Life Issues. And these two subjects I actually use as my program format, HIV, AIDS, and incarceration. And now I'm my own entrepreneur, my own businessman. I'm a cosmetologist. So I can do hair, nails, pedicures, manicures, facial. I can do everything.
Hold on, left.
I can do everything. If they truly want it, then they will be motivated to get. And it will be within themselves to do that. Not looking at a TV and seeing 2 Chainz rapping, talking about, oh, I'm going to get that money. Or looking on the TV and seeing or reading the book, seeing Minister Farrakhan speaking and dropping the knowledge down, saying, you know what, that brother's right. I need to get myself together. No. Or Reverend Jesse Jackson speaking, or Reverend Al Sharpton protesting in the middle of the street, stopping cars because he think that this situation was wrong and he's doing something for the right cause. That should not motivate each individual. That shouldn't do it. Yes, we have role models. We have people that inspire us. But the motivation that we should have, it should be within self to go out and get. And don't worry about what was. How can you worry about yesterday? You can't. So why would you ask the government that could care less about you about a respiration just because you got a black president? Come on.
All I can do is point. Hey, just to keep it on a light note, you said you're a cosmetologist, but you learned how to do hair, nails, and all. You didn't have to learn that in jail, did you?
Absolutely not. Absolutely, I knew how to cut hair since I was 13 years old. I always wanted to be a barber, but I was that veered away out of my mentality and out of my actions as I was coming up in the streets, because the streets took me away because I didn't have that role model in my ear on a daily basis, because my father got killed at the age of 6 years old when I was 6 years old, because I had a mother with four siblings as a single parent who herself was on drugs and alcohol, you know, and I'm the oldest, and I had to practically raise them on my own, you know what I mean, hide them out in the house and stop so diapers wouldn't come and take us away and separate us like they did the slaves back in the day, you know what I mean? And have our kids, you know what I mean, not knowing who each other is. Now, this is what I did, you know what I'm saying? I came up in the streets, like, very bitter. And I can relate to a lot of these kids today. And that's why I said, it's not the child's fault, it's the parents. Because the lack of education... If the parents have a lack of education, then the kids is not going to have any education at all. And I don't mean book work, school work, because we can shove them off to go to school all day, and all the school's going to do is classify them, stick them in the rocker room. Oh, he don't want to learn nothing. He got attitude. He got a behavior problem. Put him over there. Stick him in a room with the rest of the kids that ain't doing nothing. They're just pushing right through school. So what? It's just another statistics on our behalf. You know what I mean, to say that, yeah, we got 10% African Americans through school. Yeah, you know, they graduate. The rest of them quit. You know.
let me get Edward and Dennis in on this one left. Edward in Connecticut, how are you today, sir?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Hey,
hello.
Did you want to add something about the reparations that the Indians are getting, or whether or not it's going to make a buzz in the black community?
Yeah, I just want to say I disagree with you. I think that even if there was these reparations given out, these poverty parents would still find a way to ask for more money, because the same situations will still be in the community. Kids are still going to be underperforming. People are still going to be obese. And people are still still going to be crime in the community, which they're going to ask for money to try to rectify those problems.
Still be more murders. More violence, more burglaries, more rapes. It's going to be more of everything. It's going to be more chaos. Because
but hold on. But Dennis, wait. Dennis. I mean, not Dennis. I'm sorry. Edward, before I get to Dennis. Dennis, I'm sorry for keeping you on hold so long. Edward, you're saying that the poverty pimps would still find a way to get money from the federal government. Well, the federal government, their backbone would now be, what do you mean, more money? We just paid off the black community and said, that's a wrap. We're done.
No,
bank
and
closed.
You know what they'll say? They'll say that was a down payment, not a payoff.
You're probably right about that. You're probably 100% right about that. Dennis, get in here. I'm sorry about that. How are you doing, sir?
Well, it seems like orange is the new black.
Dennis, did you hear this story by any chance?
I've only heard since for the past half hour, and I was going to say, you know, I would have bought a Godfather's pizza, but I don't enjoy kimchi as a topping.
You're right, exactly.
I mean, isn't that black-owned?
It's no longer black.
It was.
It's never been black-owned. It's Godfather's pizza.
Yeah, but that was by Herman Cain. He started it.
He was the CEO. That doesn't mean he owned it. It means he ran.
Yeah, right, but at least he ran it.
Oh, no, I'm not.
He ran that chick too that he's with.
No, I'm not in any way disparaging Herman Cain. I mean, he saved the company. It was going downhill before he came on board.
I think with reparations, the problem is we have to get rid of white guilt. Think about that. Where the hell are you getting your money from? Whites in the government and white guilt. We got to take care of the black man, otherwise he's going to riot. Bullshit.
But wait a minute. I made that point. But hold on. I made the point.
Since 1965, because we had a lot of black-owned businesses before 64, 65, and there was pride in the community.
My nephew.
In the South and other ways. Yeah, but okay, go ahead, Reese.
My nephew, hold on. What am I saying? My little brother, my stepbrother. Daron Campbell, he's starring in a play in Harlem called Black Wall Street. And, you know, that's the story of that, you know, that six, what was it, 60 block, 60 square block area in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where it was owned by 600 businesses that were all, I believe it was run by blacks and Jews in this small section of Tulsa, Oklahoma. I believe it's called, I want to say Garrison, but I know I'm going to get that wrong. But it's where the Gap Band is from. In fact, you remember Charlie Wilson, the classic group, the Gap Band. In 1921, the place was burned down in a race riot. But this was 1921. There was a black-owned businesses in this area in 1921. We've never seen anything like that. But we've had multimillionaires in the black community for some 20, 30 years now. You know,
I honestly believe, Reese, that the more welfare you get, the more the liberal politician wants to keep you on the plantation. And when people like you open your mouth, it's dangerous to them because you're awakening the eyes of certain people.
But with that being said, Dennis, even though I'm opening my mouth to this, the truth of the matter is like most people have to look at the idea. You know, as Edward just says, look, the poverty pimps are going to find a way to get their hands on that government loot,
right,
regardless of that. But the bottom
because they've
line,
been hustlers from day one.
Yeah,
it
absolutely
makes no difference. They're using race now, and tomorrow will be a different scam.
That was the reason why I brought up the argument, because I said, truth be told, if African-Americans start having a real candid conversation about, hey, you know what, Barack Obama's the president of the United States. 95% of the African-American community voted for him. I just read a story today. Excuse me, I read a story today that 98% of African-American women between the ages of 18 to 29 voted for Barack Obama. 98% of African-American.
You can say black. It's okay on this show.
Well, okay. Yeah. Black women voted for Barack Obama this year. The bottom line is that, and there was a story 2 days ago that said, you know, that black leaders are now saying, you know, to the Obama administration in the White House, we're going to start using our leverage. Well, it was never leverage. We knew who you were going to vote for anyway, but now they're going to make more demands on the government. The bottom line is that these are the people who are going to be asking the president for more and more goods to dole out at their, you know, at their leisure to whoever it is that they want. But when reparations become a conversation to black people in this country, the people who are going to be holding it up in the White House or in government are going to be these poverty pimps. They're never going to
speak. I've held office. I've run for office, appointed office. And I can tell you, living in the Commonwealth, that if you're a Democrat, you mean nothing because they know how you're going to vote, and therefore the politicians don't have to give you anything. You take it for granted.
The politicians are looking out for themselves. Under the guise that they're looking out for the people.
As usual.
Well, look what happened to the woman out in New York, was it? They said that she asked Obama for help after Sandy. He had the great photo op, and all of a sudden you can hear the crickets.
Right. She hasn't heard anything from him yet. It's a constant thing. That's why
That's what every president you go on. Bush didn't even go down there to – he didn't even look or even think about going down there to that hurricane down there that destroyed the entire state. So you know that should have been expected.
That's
100%
interesting.
No, that's
you know.
The politicians. I would not want to go into BDS. That's Bush derangement syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know, when the president lands somewhere, he interferes with recovery efforts, no matter who the president is.
Absolutely.
Emphasize
that's
not true.
But who was it, Reese, that said black...
Hold on, guys. Everybody's talking at the same time.
Okay, who was it, Reese, that said that black voters are just not mature to handle their own interests? Was it last week or 2 weeks ago?
It was
on your show.
What was the guy who called in... he was not. I want to say his name is Joe, but he was from Michigan, right?
I don't know.
Oh, wasn't it Matus?
Yes,
it was Matus.
It was Matus. Yeah, Matus.
There might be some truth to it because if you keep voting for the D, and you keep getting Gazis, a nice Italian word, Sicilian word, you get nothing. what the hell is there the point for a politician to give you anything? It's human nature.
But you, I'm kind of, you know what, I'm a little confused at, because mm-hmm. I hear a lot of people saying, well, 98% or majority of the black people voted for Obama, which in doubt, you know, I have no doubt about that. But if the black people in America are the minority and the majority is the white folks, then how the hell did he stay in office?
Like, well, I said, white guilt.
Well, again, all you have to do
is a lot of the white women that's on welfare voted for Obama because they still need that help.
Exactly.
Just like the black folks.
Right.
Still need that help. They didn't want Schmidt Remedy to get in office and start cutting everything like he planned to in the beginning.
But
and then
stupid is not a racial issue. Stupid is a multiracial, generational thing. You know,
I agree with that
100%. You're stupid. Who cares what you're black or you're white? You're stupid.
Right.
If you're sitting in front of your ass all day watching Oprah or The View or some soap opera, and that's what, or you get the kids who watch Comedy Central as your main news source, there's something wrong there.
Edward, what were you going to say before?
And I can't disagree with you on that one. And we go back to being lazy.
Edward, what was your comment before?
Oh, sorry, I got cut off. I was saying I put a link on your page. I put a link on your page a little while ago.
Hold on 1 second. Let Edward in 1 second. Go ahead, Edward.
I was saying I put a link on your page that linked back to the White House and some of the photos that George Bush took during Down Katrina, you know,
right.
Comforting the people who were harmed. And none of this was publicized by any of the media.
Oh, absolutely, because he was a villain then. I mean, the idea was to make him a villain. But nobody said anything about President Obama not going to Tennessee when they had the worst flood since the Civil War. You know, there was barely any coverage on that. And
well,
that happened.
Tornadoes in the Midwest a couple of years ago. I think he sent him a Christmas card. That was about it.
In 2009, it was around either March or even late April, right around the time when the Gulf oil spill was taking place, Tennessee was underwater. There was no presidential photo ops that were taking place during that time, and no one said a word. No one even questioned him going down there, and because the people in Tennessee didn't ask for help. There was no, and it was funny because a lot of people said the reason why there was no help because there was nobody sitting out on top of their roofs begging for the government or begging for the state officials to come and save them. There were no victims. The press didn't like it. Press wanted victims.
If I might say something, a question. The gentleman who's the barber?
Yes, Les.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't say I take my hat off because I'll be getting another email with a picture of floppy ears from Sal on my Facebook last time I said I took my hat off. So I got to respect that what you did, and you raised yourself up to do something with minimal, I would think, government assistance. But
no government assistance. None.
Yeah.
That's
what I'm saying.
I couldn't even get a damn handout from... I couldn't even get a handout from anybody, the people that I knew that was in position that had contact with Hollywood or any other person that was in that was in a book club or a filmmaking or in cosmetology.
What the hell was
community.
Oprah and her book club?
Look, I talked with Stedman. He didn't give me no hand. You know what he did? He shook my hand and said, congratulations. This is what you need to do. And keep moving, man. Keep moving.
But I'm saying, do you think that the black community is self-destructive because they're so used to the handout and you expect it, and if you don't get it, or maybe you're an anomaly, if you take the world by the throat and this is what you're going to do, and damn it, you're going to do it, and then you succeed. And do you think there's some jealousy there? by others.
It's a lot of jealousy. I wouldn't consider the black communities getting handouts. However, the expectation of help is there, and when it's not there, when they don't get it, you know, when we don't get it, it becomes a disappointment. And I always say, you gotta accept rather than expect. Therefore, you have fewer disappointments. You know, because when you have disappointment in life, you become bitter. Then you begin to act out in rage and show violence, and then that's when you become stereotyped and all these other things. People start to put these other labels on you, and now you become you need to be in cages and like an animal, which is the modern day slavery, prison.
So you have met a payroll because you own the businesses, you meet your taxes. And you have the burden of the small business owner, and you hire within the community. The question is that, do others see you as the model, or do they say, well, you're one of the lucky ones, we can never do it ourselves, and then they have self-defeating attitudes? What do you feel? What do you see?
I see 25% of your first... the first one, and I see the 65% in the second, and the other 10 just don't care.
So what's the key? Is it going back to the churches, the strong black churches?
The churches is not as strong as they used to be.
To go back as it used to be, not the racial churches like Shopton and Jackson. I'm talking about the real churches that you'd get the moral...
Churches,
the moral compass saying, if you're a father, you damn well better stay. Well, you can't say damn, but in the church, but you better stay in the home and don't be a runaway dad.
These churches are commercial.
Oh.
I can't say, and I never been in a church that was racy, whatever you want to call that, or talk.
I'm talking about the shaft. I'm talking about the Shopton Jackson type, that they're not so much interested in Jesus, but their own personal aggrandizement.
Yeah, I've never been in that church. Been in a church like that, so I can't confirm that. But the churches
in other words, I'm saying, is it a moral crisis that all of us are facing, not just the black community, but everybody, especially the past few decades?
Absolutely. Many Americans lack morality.
And do you see that abortion is killing the black community, where the proponents of abortion are white liberals? And I've heard some tell me, says, we need more abortion because I come from Georgia and I don't want any more pickaninnies around me. So we've got to give the black people more abortions and birth control. I heard that 25 years ago.
I bet you did. And it definitely, I know, came from liberal.
I can't comment on that one.
We got to take a break, guys.
Hey, I know that, and I'm a libertarian.
Give me five minutes, folks.
You only hear this on Reese's show.
Break. We'll wrap it up. I got to bring up this Nicki Minaj story. I have to bring that up, and I definitely have to bring up this 2.5 Men story. With this kid, and now they're talking about religious brainwashing. On that note that Dennis just brought up about the church, I think this is an apt story. So give me about five, folks. We'll take a break. We'll be right back right here on Reese on the Radio.
Have a good one, guys.
All right, Zach.
Just stop taking me for a ride.
Come on, come on, come on.
All I wanna do is take my time.
Take your time, baby. Take your time, baby. Come on.
Just stop taking me for a ride. All I wanna do is take my time.
I'ma stand up for autographs, do mic test rehearsals. 8 years of man living, ain't no edit talk commercials. Flick the God like mummy, but my own wanna dim it. Talk the facts of how they actors don't spin on. on a limit. Ain't no need to dwell. The help of faking your jack. Ride niggas get to sit in Tahrir. So play the parks of roses. Suppose I have my whole life on you. Funny how those you love love the evil they do. I brew the medicine to heal a bit of verbals we have. But your ideas of heal is let the surface of it gap. Navigation nearly took me on some cruise type expense. Dispensing me some shitty canal. I took the juice because I'm used to one way. Detours and destinations of ways in life. I pretend the knife stuck in my spine to be a symbol. How Jack can be nimble, but it's time to make that foggy vision crystal. We got to get the crystal right. Making me for a ride.
Mike Dyson too, but we're living in a society where everybody's up for sale. Everything's up for sale, and he and Brother Sharpton and Sister Melissa and others, they have sold their souls for a mess of Obama pottage, and we invite them back to the Black prophetic tradition after Obama leaves. But at the moment, they want insider access, and they want to tell those kind of lies. They want to turn their back to poor and working people.
Well,
and it's a sad thing to see them.
Yo, and we won't stop rocking till we retire. Since the economy is such in them dire straits, that isn't an option. Our thing is to be currency kings, thoroughbred NYC burrowbred. We burrow through dirt and crack open cement. These lines were penned while I was semi-bent. The innocent smile's friend broke when he shook it. Remind me when my grandma used to say my ways need a brace, cause my ways just seem so crooked. The little black terror had a Barbera watcher, Bear Mountain skater, peace out premier, tickets out with the... peep out the transition. The ammunition that we're shooting is ambition, and implanted inside every history book. We the crew who travel to every cranny and nook of the free world, freeing girls from the mate. Pull this hard with hate. I know if I ask her to slide, she move her head back and forth instead of side to side. This be that one to ride to, the one to jump inside of and make love to your mind. I'm like that baby, that Vancouver lady, Amsterdam boy, sent to the earth to ambush your 5.1 radio decks. I revamp cassettes, set digital age, my protect your credit card, plastic, dope phone, that's oral form, cowboy style, I giddy up, she gets perky like moaning coffee, skin dark like coffee, get off me. Fixed the mouth to mouth off and she lost me in the eve of the night. I play the Monte Cristo, skip the disco, we leave in the night. Rules don't apply to thieves in the night. Still hearts like crooked card decks with more effects. Sure, with more money on the budget, you gotta love it. Screams take flight like spaceships ignite and I count it off. T-minus. Reunited after degrees in September, the leaves began rushing the earth. I fell for it. Scores of faces, so we rocked the bells for it. Not a horse, you shouldn't have dummy like that. I make sure we got glue for the summer. Make do for the summer. 900 horns, we done blew a new number. Drink with the king, I'm holding on to 40s forever.
Reese on the radio, we're back. 21 minutes to the top of the hour right here on blogtalk.com, November the 27th, 2012. Okay, so speaking of religion, apparently, I don't know if anybody watches this show. I do know that it's very, very popular in the jail prison system. But Angus T. Jones, who plays the kid on the CBS TV show, Two and a Half Men, which I never ever liked. I didn't think it was funny. I maybe thought two or three characters on the show was funny. Maybe Charlie Sheen's and that girl, the psychiatrist.
What do you mean you never ever liked? You watched this stupid show.
I watched the show maybe
don't
a half a dozen times.
What?
Maybe a half a dozen times.
Reese.
No, I don't watch it.
No, you don't watch it on a regular basis, but if it's on. And we sat here and watched quite a few with what's the
really?
Name in it.
Ashton Kutcher?
Yeah.
Sorry, honey, that's your other husband. It's not me.
You're a goddamn liar.
I'm telling you, I don't even know what Ashton Kutcher's character on this show is called.
Yes, you do.
Really? What's his name?
I don't know what he's called. I don't know what his name is. But we watched, remember the Ashton Kutcher was messing around with what's his name's girlfriend and he had to go to like counseling.
Whom's girlfriend? John Cryer's?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember that episode. Nope. Sorry. But anyway, Angus is apparently found religion sometime around his birthday. And so now he's completely, I'm not going to call it off the deep end. He's found himself. Maybe he has. 19-year-olds, you know, they do kind of quirky things. I should know. I've been there. I was kind of quirky at age 19. But anyway, here's a report that went on some CBS in California. Here's the story. And you get some audio here of Angus talking about the show Three and a Half Men. Now, apparently, there's some backpedaling on the part of Angus T. Jones. Here's the story.
Angus T. Jones has long been the half of Two and a Half Men, but now he's taking some heat for criticizing his hit show.
Jake from Two and a Half Men means nothing. He is not an existent character.
After 10 seasons as Jake on Two and a Half Men, Angus T. Jones is taking on a role as a religious devotee and denouncing his show.
If you watch Two and a Half Men, please stop watching Two and a Half Men. I'm on Two and a Half Men. I don't want to be on it.
The 19-year-old recently sat down with a controversial and mysterious religious figure, Christopher Hudson, who runs a group called The Forerunner. He came to California at the actor's request.
Please stop filling your head with filth. Please. People say it's just entertainment.
His religious comments are consistent with ones he made on his 19th birthday last month when he sat down with Connie Jeffrey at the Advent Media Center in Simi Valley to talk about his newfound beliefs.
I
basically had the experience of the baptism of the Holy Spirit that was just like...
Jones says he got into drugs when his parents divorced and was never very religious. But late last year, unsure if he'd return to the show, he questioned his course and found God.
I felt like I was being hugged inside and out, and just like, it was the best feeling ever.
Connie Jeffrey released a statement which read in part, "The Adventist Church in North America was pleased to learn that Angus T. Jones recently began attending one of their churches in Southern California and became a baptized member." We were unable to reach Jones's mother for comment, but she told a British newspaper she felt her son was being exploited. Late tonight, we reached Christopher Hudson. He's a televangelist you saw in those videos. We reached him by phone, and he said those claims are absolutely ridiculous. In the meantime, we were unable to get a comment from CBS, Warner Brothers, or producer Chuck Lorre. Reporting live tonight in Burbank, Serene Branson, CBS 2 News.
Now, Chuck Lorre's obviously right now got a track record of sending his actors off the deep end. First, Charlie Sheen went nuts, you know, with the whole Tiger Blood thing. You know, I'm on the drug, Charlie Sheen. You know, his whole episode, I'm sure all of you remember it, he went on the crazy train. But, look, I don't know whether or not this group is a cult or whatever, but the kid's been on this show for 10 years. He's been on the show for 10 years. He doesn't like being on the show anymore. He probably feels as though some of the stuff that he's been a part of, he's ashamed of. Maybe he's ashamed of the direction that the show is going in. You know, should he feel horrible about some of the stuff that he's been made to do on that program?
He wasn't made to do anything.
Okay.
He chose to do it.
Remember.
And he got paid. So if you don't like the show, little boy, and now you're all, you know, godly and you are, you know, you don't... You know, that's fine, well and good, but you got paid, my man, and I'm sure that you ain't giving that damn money
away. He was a child.
I don't care if he was
Mary,
a child or not.
Mary, how do you feel about Honey Boo Boo? Honey Boo Boo know what she's doing?
Her and her mama, they all know what they're doing.
Honey Boo Boo knows what she's
doing?
Oh, give me a break.
Children are at a very young age.
Are intuitive.
Children are already trying to manipulate their parents and anyone else that they can. Oh, Mommy, Daddy said I could go out and play.
Knowing damn well Daddy didn't say anything.
Knowing damn well Daddy said no. Or, Mommy, Daddy said I can't go outside. Can I please go out just for a little while, Mommy? Please? Okay, go outside and get off my back. Whatever. Kids they know when they can start manipulating you at an early age.
I'm just saying.
So this kid knew. You don't live, what did he grow up in, a shoebox?
Listen to me. Again,
you don't live amongst all these people.
Don't you believe that he is being influenced by a group of adults in Hollywood?
Now he's being influenced by some church.
Well, no, now he's at the age where he can choose and make his decisions, right? He's making his decisions to be a part of this group, this religious group. But when he was 19 now.
He's 19. So from the age of 9.
Yeah.
He's been on the show for 10 years.
Yes, that's correct.
You think at the age of 9, kids don't already know what the hell
I don't
is
think
going
that
on?
His mother and father tell him.
Okay, even by the age of 12 or 13, after being.
And plus, he's been in movies before then.
Okay, so you've been acting.
Right.
So you kind of know what it is.
Right. But what?
If you don't want to do it. You say you don't want to do it. Your parents want you to do it. You have enough money. Take their asses to court.
What?
Become emancipated and go on about your life.
How is he going to know that at 9?
Maybe not at 9, but by the time you're 12 or 13.
So, okay, by the time he's 12 or 13, by then he's in it 4 years now.
Okay, so what? Go for the gusto? Keep moving?
Guys,
how come you don't quit then? So how come when you turned 16, you didn't? If it was so horrible and so horrific, how come you didn't quit when you were 16, get emancipated at the courts, you know, from your parents, and you've made enough money at this point to way more than enough money to go out and live on your own and all that. You could have taken legal actions. You could have quit. You didn't have to keep going. You could have broke your contract, paid them back any monies or whatever if you felt that strongly about it.
Anybody want to help me here?
And now all of a sudden at 19 you want to come in and say, oh, don't watch the show and blah, 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 blah. I hope they sue your ass.
Anybody want to help me here? Disagree?
Yeah.
Mary?
I used to be a Democrat. I mean, if that tells you something.
That's a
you know, I held science for, and gave out literature for John Kennedy, and I was 10 years old back in 1960. I mean, and I voted for Jimmy Carter when I was 26. What the hell does that tell you?
I'm almost certain that this is just a phase for this kid.
You think it's just a phase?
Yeah, it's a phase. I mean, he grew up on this one show. Outside, he did the Queen Latifah Steve Martin movie, but, I mean, he grew up on this one show. This is all he knows. Once you get a taste of other, well, then again, he is.
And now he's joining a cult?
Nobody said it was a cult. It's a controversial religious group.
It's a controversial religious group.
That's
the difference. It's equivalent to cult.
No.
Okay?
You don't get.
Waco?
No, it's not the Branch Davidians, okay? And the leader, the spiritual leader who's in the video with him, he's a black kid. He's the leader of this forerunner group.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And is that the kid that's with him?
Yeah, the black guy that's with him, very young, bald-headed black guy, that's the leader of the forerunner group that he joined. In fact, if you hear in the report, she says that, you know, they called him. He came to California on the at the request of Agnes T. Jones. So,
wow.
You know, I don't know much about the group. They're calling they're called controversial, but, you know, what are you going to say?
Why should anybody care what Hollywood does?
Exactly.
Well, Sunday morning, do we go out and do it? Sunday morning, do we go out and bash mailboxes?
What's the guy's name?
I don't know the who's the,
doesn't it tell you?
Agnes T. Jones?
No, who's the cult leader?
Oh, I don't know what the name of the cult. Forerunner is the name of the group.
I never could understand that. Why anyone cares about what someone in Hollywood does?
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense to me why anybody would care, but I think what it is the only reason why people are paying attention to it is because of the breakdown that happened with Charlie Sheen. That's why it's gotten.
But I bet you won't have anybody talking about China landing its first aircraft on its own aircraft carrier. That you won't hear.
Yeah, but
we're the crickets.
You know, my favorite line about that story is that the news report says that it's not operable. I said, yeah, that's what the Emperor said in Return of the Jedi.
You'll now learn that this Death Star is fully operational.
That's
if you say so, I only saw one of those movies.
Sorry. Okay. A horrible, horrible reference. Yeah, I'll find. In fact, go to Deadline.com. You can read the story. I'm trying to get into this story about Nicki Minaj. I don't know if anybody ever heard. Okay.
Nicki Minaj.
Rapper Nicki Minaj.
Oh, well, there you go. Once you said the word rapper, I'm out of here.
No, wait, Dennis, don't go anywhere. Are you crazy?
No.
Dennis, this has to do with a Boston icon, my friend.
Kevin White came back from the dead and started dancing at Don Blindstrom's?
No, Steven Tyler, man.
Who the hell is that?
Of Aerosmith.
Steven Tyler.
I hated the 60s. I'm into opera.
Beautiful daughter.
She's breaking up.
His daughter was in Armageddon. Liv Tyler. Aerosmith.
Never heard of him.
Well,
do you not watch American Idol?
No. That's not Dennis's style.
Are you kidding?
It's no Aerosmith. It's from his town, for crying out loud.
All right,
pop culture. I listen to Wagner. Now, if you ask me about the Ring des Nibelungen and what the Siegfried do, then I could tell you. But Aerosmith? Nein, danke.
Hey, Reese.
Yes.
49 minutes ago, third boy accuses animal puppeteer of sex.
What?
There's a third person that's accusing Kevin Clash of underage sex.
Does he belong
Is
to
it
the
Big Bird?
Say again? Yeah, no, not Big Bird.
Hey,
apparently it's another man. But here's the interesting part about that story, JC, is that this kid has filed his lawsuit under the name John Doe. He's not revealing his name.
Imagine if it was Jane Doe, then you'd have a story. The guy went both ways.
I wonder how much older he is than me. I wonder how much older he is than I am.
I didn't hear that question. Say it again.
Nobody
I wonder
cares.
How much older he is than I am. That's all get my reparations.
He's 52.
Never mind. Hey, Maurice.
Yes.
And tell me.
I'm still trying to get into this Nicki Minaj story.
Okay, I think my story's better.
Okay, go ahead. Tell your story. I'll end
Any
it with the Nicki Minaj.
Any story other than Nicki Minaj is better.
Go ahead. What's the story?
Did you discuss the face of Halle Berry's ex after she got punched by a box of boys?
We talked about it yesterday. We opened the show with it yesterday.
Well, I was a few
Did J.C. discuss
yesterday.
His Talk It To Me cake?
All right. Let me
put
just...
Put the pecan pie down.
Anyway... Here's the story. Anyway, okay, so Aerosmith frontman Steven Tyler may indeed be past his time as a rock god, but it would be safe to say that he's a rock legend, with classic songs that continue to stand the test of time. Tyler would never be confused with the flash-in-the-pan notoriety of his current counterparts like Justin Bieber or rapper Wiz Khalifa. So, when he tweeted this week about the current stock of American Idol judges, Mariah Carey, Keith Urban, Nicki Minaj, one would expect most to consider those credentials. Yet, it has turned into a conversation about race.
Uh-oh.
Tyler tweeted about current American Idol judge Nicki Minaj and her qualifications, stating, "If it was Bob Dylan, Nicki Minaj would have sent him to the cornfield. Whereas, if it was Bob Dylan with us, we would have brought the best out of him, as we did with Philip Phillips, just saying." This appropriately angered Nicki Minaj to respond, calling Tyler bitter over his alleged dismissal from the top-rated show, tweeting, "I understand you really wanted to keep your job, but take that up with the producers. I haven't done anything to you." Then she says, "That's a racist comment." So she then tweets afterwards, "You assume that I wouldn't have liked Bob Dylan. Why? Black? Rapper? What? Go F yourself and worry about yourself, babe." That's what she tweeted back to him. So,
go F yourself.
Yeah, go.
And worry about yourself, babe. Well, check this out, Nicki Minaj. Go F yourself, because nobody gives a damn what you think. Talentless little. Hating, I don't know what, like, creature. This girl is a trip. You talked about Justin Bieber, just to put a little bug in your ear. That was cute. Justin Bieber is being sued by a concert goer because she said she went to his concert and his music was so loud that she lost her hearing. She's partially deaf now. She has a hearing problem because she saw Speed in concert. It was just too loud for her.
Well, my point was...
And she's suing him for some $9 million.
Anyway, my point about this whole Nicki Minaj thing was, and here's where Steven Tyler is making a very valid point, and it's being missed. What scares me is that, one... He's talking about whether or not she's qualified to square off talent. Like, who's talented, who's not. And if she saw somebody like Bob Dylan, who's not sort of melodious, whether or not she'd be able to see that he could be effective in another way, and she could nurture that.
Well,
Or see the genius in him.
She's probably less open-minded than others from his generation or my generation or any of our generation was to music. You're so one track. All you think about is pop, 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 money, hey. Money, money on the radio, number one, dance music, rap music, you know, all. It's it's not easy if you don't have an elaborate liking or an elaborate openness to everything in music. There's so much talent that you would miss out on.
This is exactly my point. Mary, you nailed it down succinctly. But this is why I will... You can check out the article on ResonRadio.com, the top story. But this is where I think, I can only reiterate what you just said. Here's what I wrote. Here's where Tyler makes his point crystal clear by way of Minaj. If Darling Nikki understood anything, she'd understand that Bob Dylan isn't known to be melodious. Tyler understands that a judge like Nikki will most likely hail a young, pretty karaoke singer belting out another tired Whitney Houston ballad and wouldn't consider nurturing a voice like Dylan. That's it. That's exactly what he's saying.
Okay, okay. I haven't said that, Reese.
Nowadays, anyway.
He's still out of line.
You have machines that can make you talented.
Well, how is he out of line, JC? And you'll get the last word on this before we get out of here.
Okay. When was the last time that Bob Dylan went in the best pop category?
Well, no. See, that's the thing. Because, see, what he said in his statement was how we ended up getting a guy like Philip Phillips to become the American Idol because he's the one who won is because he didn't sound like every other quote-unquote pretty karaoke singer out there. They nurtured him. They worked with him. They had the talent scouts work with him and teach him how to work into it. And what did he do? He belted out music that the fans and the audience clearly loved and appreciated. That's why
okay.
He's now the reigning champion.
Well,
on
the same token, Reese, they're looking for, the show is based on the search for America's next pop idol. And from the use of, use that in contrast to this guy, Bob Dylan.
JC, with that being said, what's the gay guy that plays in all the musicals now in the plays? What's his name? He was on
The Apprentice.
Clay?
Yeah, okay, Clay Aiken, and what's the big
Ruben.
Ruben Studdard. And even what's the girl? I can't stand her.
Fantasia.
What
about
Fantasia?
Fantasia. I cannot even listen to her talk. It drives me in freaking insane.
We gotta
end
the show.
Anyway, but it's just like where are all of them now? Fantasia's done more than the rest of them have, and that ain't.
Ruben's doing gospel.
None of them have a number one hit, and none of them ever did have a number one hit. None of them went on to be number one hit. The successful people on that show were Carrie Underwood, the first Kelly Clarkson, Carrie Underwood,
That's our show for tonight,
folks. America has really fallen down.
That's our show for tonight. We'll see you tomorrow. Stay back. Stay back.